Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive with us. Today, you know how we always say anything connected to the internet is a potential target for hackers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today we're looking at something you might not expect, office printers.
Yep, specifically we're going to dive into some research on security flaws in Xerox VersaLink printers, those big multifunction ones you see everywhere, the C7025 model to be exact.
Right, and get this, these vulnerabilities could let hackers steal your Windows Active Directory credentials.
And that's a huge deal. Think of Active Directory as the central hub for a lot of organizations. It's like the key to the whole network.
So we're talking more than just someone printing a few extra copies, right? This is about sensitive files, financial records, all that.
Exactly. It gives them a way to move around the network. They could potentially get control of servers, basically anything connected to it.
Whoa. Okay, so how does this even work? What makes printers such a weak point?
The researchers are calling this a passback attack, and it's pretty clever. They're using the printer's own systems against the network, like a Trojan horse.
Okay, so how?
Basically, they trick the printer into sending your login info to a fake server. They're exploiting the trust that's already there between the network and the printer to slip past all the security.
So the printer is unknowingly giving away the keys to the kingdom.
That's a great way to put it. You can think of it like this. Imagine someone setting up a fake mailbox that looks exactly like your real one. You drop your important letter in thinking it's safe, but it ends up in the wrong hands.
Okay, I get it. And the research highlights two specific vulnerabilities, right? Something about CVE numbers.
Yeah, CVE-2024-ENDA-510 and CVE-2024-125-11.
So what do those actually mean, though?
Okay, so the first one, that's a weakness in how the printer handles something called LDAP. That's basically the network's phone book. It stores all the usernames and passwords.
Right, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, so if an attacker can get into the printer's settings for LDAP, they can redirect those credentials to their own server.
So they're changing the address where that sensitive info is going.
Exactly. The second vulnerability, CVE-2024-125-11, that's all about the printer's user address book.
Okay.
If someone gets physical access or sometimes even remote access to the printer, they can take advantage of a problem in those address book settings to redirect that login data again.
Wait, so hold on. Remote control of a printer, that sounds like a movie. How common is that?
More common than you think. Many printers these days have web interfaces, so IT can manage them remotely.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's convenient, but if it's not properly secured, that's a major vulnerability. Imagine someone plugging a device into your printer or even just changing some settings remotely to grab your login info.
Okay, that's a little freaky. Now, this isn't just about printers, right? We've got this other research on HealthStream MSW software a lot of healthcare organizations use.
Right, and it shows that this is a bigger issue. The attack surface is getting bigger. It's not just computers and servers anymore.
Right. Makes sense. So what's going on with HealthStream?
Well, it has this flaw called a SQL injection vulnerability. It's categorized as CVE-2024-56735, and it could give attackers access to patient data.
So medical records. That's pretty serious.
Yeah, it shows why we need to be proactive about security everywhere in IT. We can't just assume a device is safe anymore.
Definitely not. So before I unplug everything in my office, let's talk about how to protect ourselves. Xerox has a patch for these printer problems, right?
Yes. Updating to Service Pack 57.75 Top 53 should be the first thing you do if you have one of these Xerox printers. But it's not the only thing.
Okay, good. So let's talk about those other steps. What else can we do to lock down our printers and our systems in general, for that matter?
One of the most important things is to make your authentication stronger. That means tough passwords for the admin account on the printer. And I mean really strong, not just password 123.
Right, right.
And disable remote access unless you absolutely need it.
You know, I honestly don't even know what my printer's password is, let alone if it has remote access enabled.
And that's exactly the problem. We often overlook these things, but they can be a gold mine for attackers if they're not secured.
So patching, strong passwords, disabling remote access, what else?
You need to restrict access to the configuration settings on the printer, too.
Okay.
Limit who can change things like the LDAP settings and address book entries we talked about, like putting a lock on the printer's brain.
Gotcha. Extra layers of security? Good idea.
Exactly. And finally, think about monitoring the printer's network traffic. Logging all the activity and using tools to look for anything that looks suspicious, like a security camera for your printer.
So we're being proactive, not waiting for something to happen, but actually looking for threats.
Precisely. And this is where things get even more interesting, because it's not just securing the printer itself, it's understanding the big picture of how these problems fit into the growing attack surface.
Right. We talked about that a little bit.
Yeah. And we'll dig into that even more in part two. We'll unpack what that means for your data and how to stay safe.
So we've been talking about these printer security problems, but it's got me thinking about this whole idea of the expanding attack surface. That's a bit unsettling to think how many devices we have are actually targets now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a shift, right? We used to think about security like protecting our network like it was a building, a physical perimeter. But with the Internet of Things, that perimeter doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Everything's connected. So the number of ways hackers can get in, it's just exploded.
Okay, so paint me a picture. What does this expanding attack surface actually look like in real life? What kind of devices are we even talking about?
I mean, just think about your house or your office. You've got your computers, smartphones, tablets, sure. But then you've also got printers, as we've seen. You've got security cameras, smart TVs, even some refrigerators these days can connect to the internet.
Oh yeah, you can order groceries right from the fridge.
Exactly. And it's not just those home devices. Industrial settings, you've got power grids, factories, all these critical places that are getting more and more connected. And all of these, they're potential weak spots for hackers.
So it's not just about data theft anymore, right? We could be talking about like disrupting power or even causing actual damage.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember the HealthStream thing we touched on? That's a perfect example. Hackers could go after systems that have really personal data, like medical records.
It's not just credit card numbers anymore. It's information that could have really bad consequences if it gets out.
That's right. And it gets even scarier when you think about medical devices that are connected. Like, imagine if someone hacked a pacemaker or an insulin pump.
Okay, that's officially terrifying. So, knowing all this, what do we even do? It feels like trying to secure a house with 1,000 doors.
Yeah, it can feel overwhelming. The key is to be strategic, right? Think about layers of protection and be proactive.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've already talked about some things: patching printers, strong passwords, disabling remote access. What else can we do to boost our defenses, knowing this attack surface is always getting bigger?
One good strategy is something called network segmentation.
Okay, what's that?
It's basically splitting up your network into smaller sections that are separated from each other. That way, if one part gets hacked, the damage is contained. Kind of like having firewalls for different rooms in a house.
So you're not just relying on one big wall around the whole network. You're creating these little secure zones inside.
Exactly. And within those zones, you can put controls on who can access what. The idea is least privilege, give people only the access they absolutely need to do their jobs, no more extra access just in case.
So even if someone does get in, they can't just run wild through the whole system.
That's the idea. And another crucial thing is to always review and update your security policies. Don't just use those generic ones. Take a good look at your own risks and customize your policies. What kind of data do you have? How are attackers most likely to try to get in? And then the big one, are you actually enforcing those policies?
Right, so you can have the best policies in the world, but if no one's following them.
Exactly. You need to do regular checks and make sure your systems are secure. Because cybersecurity, it's not a one-time thing, it's a process. And as that attack surface keeps growing, that process gets more and more important.
You know, you're right. It's easy to get caught up in all the scary stuff, but I'm starting to see that we need to shift how we think about this. It's less about building a giant wall and more about building something that's flexible, that can adapt, that's always checking and rechecking.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. We can't just hold on to this idea of a fixed perimeter anymore. We need to accept that security is always changing.
Which actually brings us to an even more advanced idea we'll discuss in part three: zero trust. But before we get there's one thing I want to emphasize.
Well,
All this stuff we're talking about, it all comes down to one thing: people. How people behave.
totally. We can have the best tech in the world, but if people aren't careful, it won't matter.
Exactly. We need to get better at teaching ourselves and our teams about these risks and how to avoid them. Then we'll be in a much better position.
I totally agree. Security is everyone's job, not just the IT people. Everyone needs to do their part.
So, as we wrap up this part, what's the one thing you want listeners to take away?
The attack surface is growing, that's for sure, but so are the ways to protect ourselves. If you're proactive, if we think in layers, and if we build a culture where everyone's aware and paying attention, we can keep our data safe.
Love it. Awareness and vigilance. I'm going to remember that. And speaking of vigilance, we'll be back in part three to explore the idea of zero trust and see how that can help us stay ahead of the bad guys. Okay, so we're back for the final part of this deep dive, and man, we've talked about a lot, from the Xerox printer problems to this whole expanding attack surface thing.
Yeah, we've covered some ground.
And I think it's pretty clear, in this world where everything's connected, just having firewalls and antivirus software, well, it's not enough anymore.
It's just not. Those are still important, but yeah, they're not the whole picture.
Right, because if we have to assume that anything could be vulnerable, then we need a whole new way of thinking about security.
We do, and that's where this idea of zero trust comes in.
Okay, zero trust. You mentioned this earlier, and it kind of sounded like a sci-fi concept.
Yeah.
So break it down for us. What's the basic idea?
Okay, so imagine airport security. You
Right.
have your ticket, right? But they still check your ID, they scan your bags at every single checkpoint.
Yep, they sure do.
Zero trust, it's kind of like that, but for the digital world, it says, look, we can't just trust any user or device, even if they're already inside the network.
So we're saying we can't trust anything anymore. That sounds a little, I don't know, pessimistic.
It's not about being pessimistic, it's about being realistic. Instead of just blindly trusting what's on our network, we're always checking and double-checking every request to get in. It's almost like guilty until proven innocent, but for computers and users.
Okay, I see, I see. So how does zero trust actually work in the real world? What are the key parts?
So first, you need really strong ways to verify who users are, like multi-factor authentication, really good password rules, all that stuff we talked about before, but even more so.
Okay.
And then you got to control access based on least privilege. That means people only get access to the info and systems they absolutely need for their job. No more giving access just in case.
So you're checking who people are and then limiting what they can do, even if they are who they say they are.
Exactly. And you also need to always be watching your network for any weird activity,
like
intrusion detection systems, security tools that can spot unusual stuff and send alerts.
This all sounds like a lot of work, like constantly checking and rechecking everything and everyone. Is it even realistic to do zero trust without slowing everything down?
It's a big change for sure, but it's becoming more and more necessary, especially with so many people working remotely and using the cloud. You're not just trying to protect a physical office anymore. You're protecting data that could be accessed from anywhere.
Right, that's true. If data is everywhere, you can't rely on just one wall to protect it.
Exactly. And the good news is that zero trust, it's not just about preventing bad stuff. It can actually make managing your IT more efficient. It can help you follow data privacy rules. And it can even make things easier for users by simplifying how they get to the resources they need.
So it's not just security for the sake of security. It can actually make things run better and be easier to use.
Yeah, exactly. And it's done right, zero trust can be good for security and productivity.
You know, I'll admit, I was a little skeptical at first, but I'm starting to see how zero trust could be a good thing. It's like a more complete way to think about security in this crazy digital world.
I think so too. And it's a journey, not a race. Start by looking at how secure you are now, figure out what your most important stuff is, and then start adding in zero trust principles bit by bit.
So even if we can't get to perfect zero trust right away, we can at least start moving in that direction. Progress over perfection.
Exactly. And one more thing, this isn't all about the tech. Zero trust needs the whole organization to change how they think about security too.
Oh yeah, that's important.
People need to understand why things are changing and they need to be willing to adjust what they do.
Because the best security system in the world won't matter if someone's clicking on phishing emails or using a weak password.
You got it. So training people, being clear about the rules, and building a culture where everyone feels responsible for security, that's all part of making zero trust work.
That makes sense. So as we wrap up this whole deep dive, what's the one big thing you want our listeners to walk away with?
It's this. In our world today, where everything's connected, security can't be something we think about later. It has to be part of everything we do. The devices we use, the software we install, how we handle data, it all matters. And zero trust, it gives us a way to do that.
It's about being proactive, being on guard, and never assuming that anything is completely safe.
Absolutely. And remember, the more you know about the threats out there, the better you can protect yourself, your organization, and your data.
Well said. And on that note, a huge thank you to our expert for guiding us through this deep dive. We explored printer vulnerabilities, the ever-expanding attack surface, and the world of zero trust. I know I learned a lot, and I hope everyone listening did too. Until next time, stay safe and stay curious.